Good morning. I'd like to welcome everyone to this morning's council study session, Mesa City Council, for Thursday, April 5th, 2012. Let me see, everyone's here, so nobody's on the phone. We shall begin today's meeting with a presentation from Parks and Recreation. Mr. Marcus Hirschburgis.
Little under the weather this morning, so I'm going to try and choke through this.
I'm sorry. I'm certain I made you feel much better.
For the better part of the last year and a half or so, our department's been working on redefining our mission and vision and really focusing on four key areas within the community, and that's to provide urban forests, natural areas, and waters that endure and captivate, deliver recreation that inspires personal growth, healthy lifestyles, and a sense of community, creating dynamic parks that shape city character and meet diverse community needs, maintain a safe place to play, celebrate, contemplate, and recreate. So we've really been trying to integrate that into all of our staff work plans, all of our new projects, all of our programming efforts of how do we tie back to one of these four visions to help build a better community and move forward as we continue to restore our parks and recreation system. Some of the innovative things that we're working towards, we're using our gold medal plan, which that vision and new mission statement are tied around. We created a 15-year strategic plan for the department to help move us forward called Gold Medal 2025. The Gold Medal Award for Parks and Recreation Excellence is the highest award that a municipal department can be awarded for excellence in management. It's awarded by the National Recreation and Park Association and the American Academy of Parks and Recreation Administrators. The city's been a three-time winner in the past, but hasn't made application in about the last 10 years, so we submitted an application to be recognized with that award again. Where I've also been working on our self-study for accreditation by the Commission for Accreditation of Parks and Recreation Agencies. We'll be submitting that application and the self-study later this summer, early next fall. And then hopefully go through that process and hearings and be recognized with the accreditation early in 2013. And then we also just put all of our staff through a customer service initiative called Gold Medal Customer Service, so to ensure that all of our program staff and all of our facility staff were delivering the same consistent customer service message across the facilities and programs. Partnerships from the past, today, tomorrow, and beyond are what's really been the success of our department. You can see some of those partners there, and it goes much more beyond that, but some of those big events that we've been fortunate enough to host in the past year or so. And there's been a great economic impact, and March was an unbelievable month. We had three major tournaments in town. Our Citrus Classic swimming meets continue to grow. And then early this summer, we're even bringing in events during the off season when it's much warmer, such as the National Junior Disability Championship. So that'll be a big boom at the end of July for the city. Some of the things we're looking at moving forward with is our Rec Express program, kind of using the library's theme of the Mesa Express libraries, and how do we capitalize on vacant space within the city. We've been trying to identify those venues that are vacant throughout the city where we could provide programming, such as fitness and wellness programs, martial arts programs, tumbling programs, etc. And any of those facilities could happen in vacant storefronts, the seminaries, the mall spaces, etc. So we're continuing to reach out to those different venues and those facilities to explore those possibilities. One of the things that that we're proud of is that whatever silos existed in the past, if there were, they've been broken down, and we're partnering with other city departments to expand those programming opportunities, whether it's cultural arts, the museums, and this summer we're working with library staff to provide joint camps, masterminds, and masterpieces that integrate reading activities as well as arts and crafts programs that'll happen at both Main and Red Mountain libraries. So we're excited to work with Heather and her staff to capitalize on some of that space that would have otherwise gone sat empty. Fun and fitness on demand. With such a diverse city and such a large spread out city and not having a ton of brick and mortar space to provide programming, one of the things that we're proud of is our mobile recreation unit. Mesa is the only community in the valley that, as far as we're aware of, that still provides mobile recreation unit as outreach to those that otherwise couldn't reach the those facilities or services that we provide. And so we're going to continue to work with potential sponsorships, et cetera, to see if there's an opportunity to expand that program even further so we can reach more people. Based on the success of our 75th anniversary celebrations last year, we're proud to continue those for 2012, and we're going to use it as a way to celebrate Mesa in 2012. And I'd like to invite everybody out at this point to the first event, June 21st, from 6 to 9 at Pioneer Park, and then on Saturday, October 20th in the fall, 6 to 9 at Red Mountain Park Soccer Complex. One of the things we're going to add, if you had an opportunity to participate in those events last year, you saw all the interactive activities we provided for the community and the great response we got. One of the things we're going to do this year is implement more of the city departments in that and do a showcase, a Mesa showcase, where people can come out and learn more about what the city offers and all the services we provide.
Mayor, and Mayor, come just quickly, Mark, while you're here. What we're actually doing is combining our City Hall at the Mall. We're going to do it in the parks this year, and we've invited Westcor to be part of, come with us to the parks. And so where in the past we've been at Fiesta Mall and Superstition, where this year, with the great turnouts we had at these events last year, we're going to try and focus on being out in the parks with our departments and invite Westcor to be a partner there. We're going to try that this year with these two events.
Future park projects and where are we headed? We've seen the IMESA presentation, and we've been working with the Parks and Recreation Advisory Board and both the IMESA Steering Committee to kind of narrow those ideas down and figure out where we're going, and believe on April 19th we'll bring back to you a full package that identifies a park CIP program. Financial outlook. Really hats off to our staff who have done a good job of recognizing the one area that we can control is our personal services. Whether it's when someone leaves, evaluating that position and looking for opportunities to underfill it, what exactly the position is doing, change it up, and control our staffing levels throughout, we're looking at $1 million savings just in personal services alone. So hats off to the staff for being cognizant of that and recognizing what they can control. And as you can tell there, we're on track for another good year with savings.
Excuse me, purchased capital.
That's a combination of the capital that's been approved, and then we also have a program support, which includes $964,000 of infrastructure replacement, just to allow us to try and, that's in our operating dollars, just to try and keep up with the infrastructure that we're headed.
Candace, why don't you explain the difference between purchase capital and then, like, what's in our capital improvement program?
Purchase capital is actually within the department's operating budgets, so it's the small items. It's the non-construction items. Okay. So there are some items, just by accounting terms, it might be a commodity or it might be a capital. For accounting terms, it's also things like Mark explained, fixing things, replacing small items. Things in his parks, that types of things. Yes, it depends on what it is.
If you fix thing, yes. Isn't that sort of like repairs?
It's a repair. But it's not. Okay. But it's not a full remodel. It's not a construction project.
It's
not overseen by engineering. It doesn't go through a large process. So there's quite a few purchase capital items. It's also equipment. It could be lawnmowers for his parks and cemetery and so
bigger
forth.
Bigger duct tape.
Yeah, it's big things.
So. I'm just learning all these new terms. I hadn't seen that before, so go ahead. Yeah, I know, so go ahead.
So you will see purchase capital are things that are one-time items, so sometimes you will see...
No, I understand what they are now. Okay. All right. I think. Go ahead.
It really is what we use to keep up with the playground improvements and those type of things where we need to address. And without, you know, a slide replacement at a park... So when we need to repair a diving board that needs to be recoated in fiberglass.
So these are repairs and small capital items that aren't significant enough to get into the capital improvement program.
Correct. Okay. With that, I'd be happy to answer any other questions.
Where's the maintenance and other services?
other services that's in that line item. You can see we requested an increase. That is to cover our contractual repairs. We've made additional requests through the city manager's office that we're working at. If you recall, last year working with the environmental fund, we did increase the maintenance levels in the basins, and now we're trying to figure out how do we balance out and keep the parks and the basins on the same even par. But we're seeing some increases in our contractual labor costs, just as fuel goes up and right. those employee costs go up for them as well.
And over the last few years, we've added two or three more parks, too. And so I just want to make sure you have the money and the funding you need to maintain those parks properly. I mean, it's time to pay the piper, I think, for having to cut the budgets there. And so you know, any way that we can get park maintenance money in there, I think, is an important thing that we want to make sure we can cover.
Yeah, Mayor and Council, we're evaluating that. Based what we've, as you know, we've talked about trying to separate the ongoing cost impacts with the one-times, and our ongoing ability to provide things for ongoing is somewhat limited. But I think we've talked to Mark, and we're looking at the addition of some of our one-time revenues. We had some general fund savings in our bonds, and so. Even if it's for next year, we could maybe increase the park maintenance and then evaluate the following year to see if there's some more money. So we are working to try. I think there's requests is about $1 million.
Correct.
For all of it. So I don't know if we'll be able to get all of it, but I think we're going to try to get a big portion of that.
And that would be maybe replacing a tree we couldn't replace. When you say one-time
maintenance. Well, it's even more than that. It's fertilization.
Increase some fertilizations, but it's also some big projects, too. We have some irrigation systems that are outdated and water on a 24-hour cycle. It would address some of those so we can reduce those watering costs and upgrade pumps and that type of stuff.
Okay. I got a question on your funding sources. That other line, that's a pretty big other line, and it also goes up by almost $2 million.
That includes the environmental fund as well as cemetery operations.
Yes, this is a look at their department. So this includes both the enterprise side and their general fund side.
Okay.
So, but the large increase you're seeing is due to the environmental compliance fee, the increase that we did into their department.
And that, if you recall, that was the funding that we put into the basin maintenance last year. Okay. We had that increase.
Which was approved after the budget was adopted.
But we brought that to the council is to shift about $1 million into basin maintenance, thank you. And that's being reflected, that's portion
correct,
of that
that's
increase.
In here. And you can see that increase in the other services on the top going from budget 11-12 for the 12-13 budget. That's that increase. And then on the bottom, it shows you where that funding is, which is in the other, which is in environmental compliance for this department. So that increase of $1 million was that environmental compliance that happened after budget adoption.
Gotcha. Councilman Fender.
With regard to potential future parks projects, have you captured the O&M in this proposed budget there, or would that need to be put in?
Yes, Mayor, Councilman Fender, what we'll do is when we bring to you the proposed capital bond program, we'll also have to make somewhat of an assessment of the impact on the O&M side. Now, the O&M side may not actually come until, it won't come until those improvements are made. Some of our parks, or some of the properties, we already have somewhat of a maintenance, but obviously if we put in more turf, more equipment, that's going to increase that. But it will happen out in some of the out years also. It's not necessarily wouldn't impact this year's budget, but it would be after we completed that project. And if the bond, assuming we had a bond election in November, those projects aren't going to get done until 2013, 2014, 2015, as we normally would over a 3 to 4 year period of a bond program.
Okay, any other questions? Thank you. The next item is to hear a presentation on the fire department budget.
Are you kicking him off the rest?
Well, we've provided those to you. If you want to cover those, we kind of left those. We're trying to be more expeditious from last week's. No, they're there for you. If you have questions, we'll be glad to answer them.
Thank you. right, all right. Who's there?
Yeah, who's there? Thank you.
I make a motion we send this budget back for reconsideration.
Oh, boy. What a great start. Good morning, Mayor.
Good morning, Chief.
I'm glad to see everybody's in excellent spirits this morning. As you know, as part of our regular budget presentation to you, we're going to cover quite a bit of detail on various things that are going on within the department and some of the things we're looking forward to in the future. But at the outset, I would like to talk about some of the general service demands that we've experienced over the last several years, and y'all have been very much a part of the helping us and guiding us through this process. But as you know, the demand for our medical services continues to increase every year. Clearly, it's the fastest growing component next to social services for our emergency response. It now constitutes well over 70%, many years, 75%, and it's approaching 80% some years. As we've discussed in the past, it's kind of ironic that as a fire department, it appears we've evolved into a situation where it appears our primary business looks like it's emergency medical, especially on a day-to-day basis. The fires are obviously devastating to the community in terms of interrupting jobs and economic development, things like that. But still, the day-to-day operation seems to be more focused on emergency medical. So with that, and pretty much in keeping with comments I've received for some time, we would like to announce that we're going to change the name of our department from the Mesa Fire Department to the Mesa Fire and Medical Department. We think that brings a lot of advantages. First of all, it's pretty much a housekeeping thing, as I mentioned. It's something that we've been working within for many years. Also, it's a very good opportunity for us to refocus. As you know, with our TRV program and the PA component to the TRV program, we've really been making a lot of investments in trying to streamline that side of our business and improve efficiencies. And internally, this also sends a very good message in terms of what our priorities are. So this is exciting for us. As you can imagine, it's created quite a bit of discussion. Actually, we've been discussing this since the first time it was mentioned, I'm sure, by the council for the past three years at least, maybe longer. We've worked our way through that. We see an opportunity to transition in a way that adds no additional cost whatsoever. It'll just be a matter of as there's turnover and we replace equipment and things of that nature, that we'll just simply begin the update as we go through that process. So that's the first point. If you look over to the second slide, that's the first point on that in terms of innovations. And if I could move on then to give you some highlights in terms of what some various innovations we've worked on. And I'm really proud of our department because, you know, in the last three or four years, the change has been amazing. And the innovations have, one has compounded and built upon another innovation and another innovation. And I'm really proud of the organization and really pleased with the improvement in service quality to the community. So I'm really happy to share these with you. We've made a presentation before on this, but just to kind of, on several of these in fact, but just to kind of refresh and for other people who may have not have known these things, we have a recruit class in training right now. That class is for 33 recruits. 17 of those are for Mesa Fire, and the remainder are from four additional agencies in the area. So the regional concept for our training academy is expanding rapidly. It's interesting because we've received inquiries on several different levels, from health and wellness to apparatus maintenance, things of that nature, where we could really see the benefit of higher volumes to reduce costs, where we could regionalize some of these activities. So the Recruit Training Academy is a major accomplishment for us. As you may know, we have a lease with Mesa Community College. And more recently, Scottsdale Community College announced that they are no longer going to pursue a fire science program, and they're going to turn that opportunity over to Mesa Community College. So what we have seen now is a real focus in Mesa for regional fire service training. As partners out at our training academy, we see that opportunity evolving over the next several years to something that I think makes not only brings us clearly into the position I think we're already in terms of leaders for this this type of training, but also really maximizes economies of scales for the region. As we mentioned, I mentioned a minute ago about the TRV program. We're happy to announce that we're very close to putting a TRV on the street with Mesa Mountain View, or help me, Councilmember Summers. Mountain Vista Medical Center.
Now you do know that we have an ongoing joke out there. Every time I go out there, I mess up and call it an interchange, call it Mountain Vista and Mountain View, which actually is not wrong because you're saying the same thing, just in a different way. So thank you for making me feel not like the only total complete idiot in the room. I was feeling sort of lonely out there, and now, Chief, that you've joined me, I appreciate it.
That's what I was thinking.
What a compliment.
I think, yeah. No, not really.
At least I have good company. Thank you.
Well, you know, the thing is, too, is we have been working on this concept for quite some time, and the hospital has stepped up to become really our first partner in providing PA-level care to the community. And again, with the TRV program as the foundation of that, interrupting the continuous flow of very low-priority patients to emergency rooms and the costs that drive that up are very ominous to the system, not to mention the fact that it reduces our ability to respond to emergencies because our resources are tied up. So that's a huge step in the right direction. And as you know, we did apply for a grant from the Medicare, actually the Health and Human Services Department of the federal government, to help us be a part of a research project that will help identify cost savings, areas of cost savings, where essentially emergency medicine can integrate with the ongoing hospital care as well as primary care physicians, and be able to identify cost savings in that process. So we're looking forward to that. As you know, that's going to be an experiment. We're not sure where that's going or what parts of that we can actually implement. We're completely aware of that, but it is a major item for us, and we're really looking forward to it. I hope we don't have our hopes up too high for that. The next item, the Business Education Safety Program, is an outstanding program implemented by our fire prevention group. As you know, we do regular scheduled inspections in our medium and high hazard occupancies for fire code. And we sort of have left some of the low emergence, low priority occupancies on a self-inspection process, which seems to have worked quite well for us. But what we've heard is some feedback that there could be more guidance in that process. So the staff has implemented a volunteer-based program where they're actually going to go out and actually help members of the community at their request work through some of the issues that they're concerned about in terms of their safety and help them overcome some of those obstacles. So we see that as a huge step in the right direction, and it is indicative of sort of the approach we take across the board with our code enforcement program. As our goal is to try to improve safety. The regulations are a guide for us to use to do that. We obviously have some obligation in terms of code enforcement, but our overall goal is to just improve safety in the community. The Connectors program, as you know, has been operating for quite some time. The calls are increasing for that. We're trying to use them even in areas where maybe a TRV isn't appropriate, but it's a very low emergency type of call. The Connectors, as you know, do all kinds of other things with us, but we're still attempting to develop that program into something that can help us with social service and other types of calls where we don't have to put emergency units out of service to deal with those. The hands-only CPR is a huge improvement for our community. As you know, we helped pilot that with Dr. Barbaro at the Department of Health Services as well as University of Arizona over the last several years. And we have seen our survival rates go from about 17% up to almost 60% and beyond, which is rather amazing. And I think it's a tribute to our ability to take a little risk here and try something new with some professional guidance, obviously, but really make a difference for the community in terms of their safety. I really can't minimize this. Hopefully at some point we'll be able to do a little presentation for you. A couple of our members actually accompanied Dr. Barbaro to South Korea to do a presentation to their national government with regard to how this program has been working for us in an effort to encourage them to take on some of the same things. As you know, what's really cool about this is it empowers the entire community to begin life-saving efforts in a very simplistic way. And so it just adds on our ability to save people who are in critical condition. So what a huge accomplishment, and what's neat about it is the customers are the winners. I mean, the patients are the winners in this one, and so I'm really proud of our organization for leading the way in that area as well. And the final item on this list in particular is has to do with a pilot where we want to try to go from the standard EPCR units that we have to a standard, if you will, iPad or some generic sort of a piece of equipment that we can buy much cheaper. It expands our ability to do not only record keeping, but to begin to develop databases that we can share from unit to unit. I think we're piloting these right now, or plan to, with our BEST program, where we go out and help the community. Again, that's the low-level hazard emergency occupancies that we help through a safety evaluation. We're going to use these to help manage that program as a pilot. So we're continually looking for ways to improve the service and to improve efficiencies. So with that, unless you have questions on that, I'll move on to the next slide.
Not a question, just a comment. Thank you so very much for that reminder. Over the last 3-4 years, it's been amazing to watch all of our public safety, especially the fire department, get creative and come up with some things that not only, and these are not only cost savings in many cases, but they dramatically improve the level of service that our fire department provides, and that's a real compliment to you. That in the middle of these challenging financial times, you've been incredibly innovative and worked with the firefighters group and everyone to do things better. And I the thing is that most citizens don't really. It's not something that jumps out there until you need the service, and then when it's provided, then they realize how substantial it is. So thank you so very much for that.
Thank
those
you.
Efforts.
Thank you. Throughout this past year, we were in a position where we needed to eliminate some of our battalion safety officers. I really don't want to go back in history to the more difficult times. I really would rather look at the more positive. But one area that we saw significant issues with in terms of our past reductions was in our battalion safety program. And what we did is that at the request of the members of our department, we needed to shore up the battalion safety officer program. And so we used funds that were available in our budget, so there was no budget allocation specifically for this, but we began to plug people into those positions over the past couple years. Mr. Brady, with his help and support, we were able to reinstate those positions. So now we have battalion safety officers in all of our battalions. And just as a reminder very quickly, the battalion safety officer works with the battalion chief. And it is there are day-to-day things that need to be done in terms of just managing a battalion. They are also a good, if you will, conduit from the management position to the field positions, because the battalion safety officers come straight from the field, have relationships with the troops in that battalion, and really facilitate really good communication and good supervisory practices. But the most important thing is that when we go out on calls, we need a set of eyes and ears to watch the overall scene in terms of safety issues for our firefighters. And in Battalion 3, we haven't had that. And that's why, as I said, the firefighters in the field really felt that was a deficit that was really difficult for them to manage, as well as the battalion chief. So we really appreciate the opportunity to add those back. We're not doing a lot of adding back. We're going forward with our new ideas, but this is an area that we felt we really needed to shore back up and get moving. And then the Firefighter Recruit Academy, as you recall, we eliminated that in previous budgets simply because we really weren't going to be hiring, so there was no sense in funding something that wasn't going to happen. Well, we're kind of back in the mode where we're going to need to begin at a minimum, and we're going to need to hire back based on attrition. So with that in mind, there is a base budget allocation now that's going to be ongoing for recruit training. So we appreciate that. Again, that helps us not have to rob other areas, you know, mid-year in order to do training that we have to do. So we appreciate that. With that, I'll turn it over to Chief Stubbs here to my left to talk about the CIP overview.
I'm going to give you an overview on some of our construction projects and then an overview on some of our upcoming needs. Station 19 at Signal Butte and Elliott is still on schedule, due to be completed sometime in early May. We anticipate occupying that station somewhere towards the end of May. Station 220 at 56th and Main, if you've been out in that direction, it's dramatically transformed that area. It's still on schedule. We expect to occupy that in late August or early September. And Station 220 is 19. We've had that unit in service. It's been housed at Station 17, so we're going to be able to move that one over. Station 220, we have an academy ongoing right now to fill that station when it opens. Our capital improvement project.
Chief, Councilman Kevin has a question.
Certainly.
Thank you. Appreciate the update on these new stations. I have a question, though, about one of our existing stations, Fire Station 203. That one, as you know, is an ancient station by city standards and is located in such a way that that Mesa is providing significant services to the city of Tempe. And it's created challenges for us, I think, budget-wise. And I know that for the past several years we've been looking to replace. We've badly needed to replace it in a location that's better suited to manage our city needs while not ignoring our mutual aid status. What is the prospects for that upcoming in terms of identifying facilities or forecasted timeline? Because just from a budget standpoint, a lot of our resources are going to a city that has placed its resources far enough away that we tend to get sucked into providing services to another community.
Mayor, Councilmember Kavanaugh. We've got that, and coming up on our next slide, I'll talk a little bit more about what we do. We've got a couple of prospects on some land right now for the relocation of Station 203. We're still looking at some other properties over there. It's pretty built up, so it's a little difficult for us. But in the offset, and I was just talking to one of the crews from Station 3 just last week, we've worked with the city of Tempe to realign some of the calls to help shift some of those calls because of the shift that they had in their station to back to their units. And they've been very accommodating with that. The crews have seen a dramatic decrease over the last, we've had this in place for about 18 months, almost 2 years. Crews have seen a pretty dramatic decrease in the amount of times that they're going to Tempe from Station 3. So that's helped us. But you're exactly right. We would like to relocate that station a little farther away from the Tempe border, not just to get away from Tempe border, but put it more concentrated where the calls are. And that's more along the Broadway Alma School alignment.
And Chief, it's also, I mean, if anybody's seen the facility, it's not just the location, but it's the modernization of the facility.
That 1950 building is a little bit antiquated.
Wait, are you saying that anything created in the 1950s is past its prime and is on the downhill slope?
I would never say that since I was born in the 50s.
Yeah, well, I'm hoping so.
It's
fruit's hanging way too low for me on that.
One of the, Mr. Brady pointed out, though, one of the problems we have with that station, the design, is not all of our apparatus will fit in there. Only selected apparatus will fit in there. We move apparatus daily to plug holes and move ups, depending on call volume and things we've got going on. I've been by there before when we've had units parked outside because they've been on a move up because their apparatus won't fit in the bay. You know, that's somewhat problematic for us just in that general area. But no, we're
sort of lower the air in the tires so it gets down a little bit.
We've had, you wouldn't believe all the suggestions we've had.
So that's not the dumbest one, huh? Whoa, darn it. I thought I lowered the bar on suggestions.
But Councilmember Kavanaugh, I'm going to, the next slide I have is going to talk a little bit more about that.
Thank you.
We've had quite an expansion at our public safety training facility. We've been in need of, as Chief pointed out, from our side, we're getting back into having recruit academies. Also on the police department side, they're getting back in that mode as well. We've been able to expand the classroom side, office space. It's been a great improvement. We've been able to move our current academy from a tiny little room where they were kind of squeezed in there to a full-size classroom with AV equipment that will function in as a classroom should. So that's been a help for us. And we've just taken possession of all of that occupancy here in the last couple of weeks. If I can turn your attention now to some of the allocations, and this goes along with what Mr. Kavanaugh was talking about. This is not an all-inclusive capital improvement request. We've had meetings with the city manager's office in the last few weeks discussing some of our top priorities, knowing that the funding or the allocations we had were somewhat limited. We've also had some really good conversations about looking at potential savings and what we could do with those. And even further, there was a dialogue with our maintenance superintendent to look at a long-range forecast to maybe even out the recycle placement of some of our vehicles so we don't have those big spikes of 1 year, $2 million, the next near $8 million or something like that. And Larry LaBarbera has gone back and has done that and reallocated so we have more of an even flow, which allows us the opportunity, and we're still having those ongoing discussions, of coming up with a plan or a formula to fund those in more of an even capacity where it's not such that hit. We can come up maybe a different plan. But what we're looking at right now is the authorization for fiscal year 11-12. And these are the money that's available to us and what it was designed for. There's $1.2 million towards apparatus sustainability. We had a little over $300,000 for burn room repairs. Our burn room has kind of fallen a little bit in disrepair because of some of the budget issues. We also have, as Chief pointed out, we've got Mesa Community College is at least out there with their academies. They're using it on a regular basis, so it gets a lot of use. And fiber connection. We talked to you a couple years ago about trying to expand our video conferencing so we can do more of our online training without moving the crews out of the station. One of those, the biggest hub we have for our training is our training center. It doesn't have fiber out there now, so we can't really do any training from there. We really would like to complete that fiber to that facility so we can do more of our online training from that facility. And then goes, Mr. Kavanaugh, when you're talking about land acquisition for future sites, including Station 3, and through the city manager's office and our administration, we've deemed Station 3's relocation as our top priority as far as land acquisition. The funding priorities we have for the remainder of this year, we would like to purchase $2.4 million towards apparatus. The burn room repair, even though is estimated to be about $500,000. The training to complete that fiber is about $160,000, and the land acquisition is what we have available. The funding needs we're looking at in fiscal year 2012 and 13, right now, again, this is not an all-inclusive list. This is just our apparatus needs down there, is $2.4 million as well. And if you come down to the bottom little corner, you can add up the funding that's available and the needs, and we're at about a $3.8 million shortfall in being able to meet our needs. We've placed our needs mostly on apparatus because if we can't get to calls or we can't support people on calls, that's kind of the heart of what we do. We also feel the burn room is extremely critical for our training needs and, again, for our leasee that we have out there, and then the fiber already explained. So that's kind of where we are with our CIP needs.
Councilmember Fender.
Your next slide, you're going to go into a little bit of your budget and where you're at and what you're projected to end up with. And I know there's some grants that are involved in, it looks like a significant amount of savings, and much of that's grants. There's a portion of that maybe $1 to $2 million that comes in under budget, which I think you regularly have done for years. Mr. City Manager, is there an opportunity here to maybe instead of, or some way, instead of bonding, be able to use some of those savings to be able to make some of these CIP purchases?
Yeah, and Mayor and Councilman Fender, and that's actually what we've talked about, is being that'll help meet some of those needs right at the beginning. I think we're going to be able to have a plan for the next year for apparatus. What you don't see and Dan mentioned is that the apparatus needs, and I think it's about 2.4, almost not quite 3 million. What we've done, we've asked the department, they've done a very good job of laying out a annual plan of apparatus replacement over the next several years. I can't remember how many, but and we've been able to kind of get it to the point where I think working with their fleet folks is we've established kind of that range of a budget of $2.5-3 million a year going out for the next several years. In the past, the apparatus, I believe I'm correct, is typically been funded through a public safety bond package. We don't have those funds available for the next couple of years. So we're going to have to try to find savings or other one-time revenues to pay for that. But that certainly, that need will continue going out into the future. And we'll have to make a decision here pretty quickly. Are we going to continue looking at funding apparatus through public safety bonds? And, you know, when would we do that? It's kind of part of the discussion we were having the other day. And so certainly this represents a significant need right off the beginning for apparatus. But I think we have to find a way to fund the replacement of apparatus between now and the point where we have public safety bonds. And so we're working very hard. And as you pointed out, I think the department's working very hard to identify savings that would help offset some of that cost. And then we're going to work with them to see if we can identify other one-time revenue opportunities to help with that. But to suggest that that could happen built into the budget for an extended period of time, I think would be very difficult on the department to find that capacity within their current budget to do that.
Given the information we have, the database, isn't it pretty well predictable when equipment is going to run its useful
life? Right, and that's why we've developed that schedule now.
Okay.
We have a schedule. They have a schedule.
Theoretically, absent some spike or significant change in service, which I know happens in shifting, you can't go out 10 years and not expect there to be shifts because the city has changed in 10 years. You should know at least 7 to 10 years out, at least.
We do.
Okay.
We do. We have that schedule. What we've tried to do is, for the most part, there's a similar type of apparatus, a majority that fits in there, but there are some other specialized pieces of equipment that have a much have a higher cost, and we've tried to figure out a way to balance out so we don't hit spikes in our apparatus over the next couple of years.
Well, and I know that sometimes we take equipment to the very end, trying to hold off on not replacing, and then all of a sudden we have more than your normal replacement. And I guess there's a way we could figure out some more systematic.
We have, and we've developed a plan for the hours. The department does a good job of putting the apparatus in position where they try to smooth out their usage. Dan, you may want to talk about that, so that we really, when we do get to the point of replacement, it's equipment that's really run through its life cycle, and we've looked at if we continue to hold on to them, what that cost would be versus the purchase of the new equipment. And some of these are 19, they're fairly older.
If you tell me they were built in the 1950s, I'm going to be.
No, hopefully. No. Don't go back that far.
Mayor, you're exactly right. And our maintenance supervisor out there, Larry LaBarbera, has done just what Mr. Brady has expressed. He's got everything down to the miles. We rotate engines and pumpers, or high mileage to stations that may not have the higher call volume as they start to age. We maximize fleet. The ones we're looking at replacing are all 15 years or older. They all have between 160 and 200,000 miles on them. Some of the other specialized apparatus that Mr. Brady talked about as well, Larry has done a pretty good job of moving those around, and that's what's really helped the balance, because as you pointed out, the pumpers and the life of those, that's pretty constant. I mean, Larry's got that dialed in to where he could do it in his sleep. The wild cards are some of our specialized units, and he's, at Mr. Bray's request, looked ahead at several years down the road and to see where we can make improvements and move those apparatus around to flatten that out, and he's done that. And I think we've got a really good plan for the future to replace our large apparatus.
And just so people remember, we don't replace equipment just because it gets to a certain age, but there's a point in time where the lines cross as far as the cost of maintaining old equipment exceeds the cost of getting new equipment. And that's what we're shooting for, correct?
You're absolutely right. And there's even one other point in what we have, because if we were delivering supplies and we just had a delay in delivering supplies, we might be okay. But when we have units out of service for downtime and it starts affecting our fleet
ability to serve,
that's that factor that some of the private sector doesn't have.
But well, and those right. And those affect each other, because if you have a service out of unit a unit out of service, your costs are going to go up, because that means you're working on that. So those arrive pretty much at the same time. And that's what we're
absolutely
focusing for, a dependability and also a cost consideration.
Right. Absolutely.
Okay.
And I would say our department and the standards that they use for replacement are fairly common. that you see across the country, at least in my experience. The numbers they use are very similar to others.
So. Gotcha.
And Mayor,
got it,
may
I? Okay. Sorry. No, go right ahead. I thought the Vice Mayor had a comment, but he said he's okay.
If I may add, I think Dan mentioned it. The lifespan of our units is quite, it's been extended sometimes 30, 40, 50,000 miles because of the level of maintenance that they get currently, as well as the quality of the product that we buy at the outset. So we're really stretching the use of this equipment, not to mention the rotation, so we can level out not only the cost but the usage. But I think you were making a very good point, is that although we have flattened this out, there's going to be essentially, I think Mr. Brady was alluding to it as well, about a $2.5 million each year if we flatten out the replacement cycle based on the planning that we've done, where we're going to need capital dollars in order to replace the critical units. So I think that's a point that needs to resonate. In addition, we have other issues that we think are important. One is our self-contained breathing apparatus, which is the devices that the firefighters use to enter hazardous conditions and fight fires, usually have a 10 to 12 year life cycle. Again, we have outstanding maintenance on those, but we're approaching the end of that life cycle. And so as well as there are significant improvements in the industry and I think some costs have actually gone down on a per unit basis to replace these units. But we're right up against that wall there that over the next 2 or 3 years, we're going to really need to look at that seriously. We're beginning to see some wear and tear on those units that make several of them unserviceable. So what we end up doing is begin to buy outdated equipment to replace the units that are unserviceable in a piecemeal fashion. And before you know it, we've spent more money just maintaining older, worn-out pieces of equipment than we would have if we had bit the bullet and gone with a full replacement.
I heard Parks and Rec has bigger rolls of duct tape.
Another key item for us is
I have to rewind through.
The computer-aided dispatch system is approaching a point where it's quite old. It's approaching the point where it needs to be replaced. We've been working closely with police department and information technology to evaluate that on an ongoing basis. It's not an item. It's you know, as there are a lot of things we can do with existing budget and move monies around, but when you start getting into the millions of dollars, we really don't have the flexibility in our operating budget to begin to cover things of that magnitude, especially if there's two or three of them back to back in the same year. So this is an item, again, that's creeping up on us, that's important to us, as well as there's a need to remodel the public safety communications facility to more accommodate the variety of dispatch and the efficiency of dispatch that fire is now using for TRVs and PAs as we anticipate that into the future. So it's just a matter of kind of keeping up. Some of this is just sustainability, as I've mentioned. And then finally, Councilmember Kavanaugh talked about Fire Station 203. We do have money in the 2008 bond to purchase the property there. However, we do not have the dollars to replace that station. And we're looking at about $3.8 million to do that. And that's using our standard design that you've seen at Station 218, and much of it is being used at Station 219 and 220. So we're reducing the cost there as well. But that is eventually, especially within the next 3 or 4 years, as already has been mentioned, that's already a critical need. It was very high on our priority 4 years or 5 years ago when we set out to identify high priorities for that bond election. So
I'm assuming, Mr. Brady, that sometime in the next month or 6 weeks or whatever, we'll come back with some specifics related to what staff might think and the Public Safety Committee might think are some critical needs that we might consider.
Yep.
If we were to put those on the ballot for a bond issue this fall. Is that accurate?
If you would like. I don't know that we had anticipated it for this fall. We could. There's a lot going into public safety, not only items you're hearing today. We had the communications presentation. We probably have some items on police. We still have a lot of work. We still have some funds today to work on to we can spend. I think we were, and the conversation with the council is, are we going to do both? I don't know that we can have the communications part, which is probably going to be the the largest portion of it. Is going, there's some regional efforts going through, and we were kind of trying to time that with them. That's probably part of this, the timing, whether we can go forward.
Okay.
Do we go forward now, or do we wait and come back in a year? And we'll be glad to have that conversation maybe at the Public Safety Committee. We certainly know there are needs. There are some things that are kind of ahead of or prepared now that we could identify, but there's some other things that we're still working on, especially on the communication side.
Yeah, and I think the only thing is that we need to just balance our needs with reality. And the reality is we're still not in a prime situation as it relates to bond financing. And that doesn't mean we don't do anything. That means that we just need to be very, very careful, like we did in 2008, to separate wants from real needs. And I get it that, you know, we're now 4 years down the road. We fully expected that we'd be out of this trough, financial trough by now. And although things are looking better, we're still not there. Which means our citizens are not there yet either. So I think we need to have that discussion at some level.
Because
in our plans for the 2008, if we'll recall, and I recall it very vividly, when we cut that bond issue to deal with the reality at that time, which I think proved to be a wise choice because the citizens got behind it and supported it, part of that was a follow-up perhaps by 2012, expecting that we would then be in a position to do that. So I think we at least need to have that, go through that process. It may not have to be a fully blown process that we had before because we're not there financially, but I think there are probably some things that are worthy of consideration. Let's put it that way. I don't want to start the train down the track and all of a sudden take on something that we can't handle, but at least we should be nibbling at it to see, you know, if there's equipment that that really has to be replaced. Then we can consider whether the amount between communications, police, fire, and the other things we have is something that the council would decide that they would like to put before voters. And I'm going to be very sensitive to that. I would imagine that my cohorts here on the council would believe that also, because we get it. That this is not a time to be throwing stuff out. But on the other hand, it's also not the time to forget our base responsibilities and the fact that even with the financial situation that it is, we still have to send public safety apparatus out to provide basic services, and many times those are life-saving services we're providing. You just forge ahead. You got to continue to invest in critical things. Identifying what those critical things are is I think, our task.
I mean, we'll be glad to do that. We've got some needs. I think we'll be able to meet most of the needs as far as the equipment for an apparatus, I guess, which to say, for this year. But my greater concern is the years after that. And so I think we could spend some time, the staff, and coming to the Public Safety Committee, bring it to the council. Maybe there's some community efforts to kind of explain where we are on some of these, because this is really now reinvesting in the infrastructure, our facilities, our equipment that we have, but they need to be replaced. And there are probably maybe some growth opportunities, maybe over the next 6 months, 7 months, we'll see where we may need some additional apparatus or stations. But we do need to take care of some of the stations we already have, and that's been a concern of mine, is we've got some older facilities that we really need to either replace or even remodel, and both for the, you know, quality of life of our firefighters and be able to get the equipment and the technology into those facilities also.
Yeah, we heard it. Stations built in the 50s. We get the things in the 50s are decrepit,
right,
and downhill.
Okay.
Let's go into your operation, your operating budget.
For Donna Orlando, as our management services administrator, she'll take us through the final slide.
Mayor, Council, this slide is an overview of the current fiscal year's budget and expenditures through February and the proposed budget for 2012-13. There is an increase that you will notice in the overall budget from this year to next year that is related to the hiring of the 13 firefighters moving into Station 220 when it opens in the next few months. The other thing I wanted to bring your attention to, as Councilmember Fenter had mentioned, was in our commodities area, it looks like that there is a significant savings there. In our current current financial system, grants are appropriated in our operations budget. The wonderful thing about our new financial system is grants will be completely separated, and we will be able to more closely identify all of the expenditures and what they're related to. In this case, we have about $5 million in grants that is allocated or appropriated in our commodities for this fiscal year in the grants. What happens is, in the beginning of a budget process, we will go through what we call a revenue estimate. That gives us the opportunity to look at our grants, past, current, and future, to analyze those activities and to decide on what we think we're going to write for and what is potentially going to be awarded. In fiscal year 2011-12, we had one grant that was about $3 million that was not allocated but was appropriated in our budget in the event that it was awarded. We also have a $1 million grant that was awarded in February and council approved in early March that is in the purchasing process that has not been expended yet. So that's kind of an overview on what the commodities section is indicating to you there.
Let me ask you something, because I'm still a little bit fuzzy as to how the grants, because, for example, the HHS, Health and Human Services grant. Now, that's not included. Well, let me back up. When we have a grant that comes in mid-year, and we have approved a lid on spending, you know, let's say our spending lid is $20 million, and we get a $4 million grant that would cause us to go above that. Can we spend that money, or do we have to include that,
so that
in the budget?
Cap, or whatever it's referred to, that we have council approves. If you know, each year we actually ask for more.
Right.
What would that, because we try to.
You tried to provide
some
cushion.
Be optimistic there. That there's going to be grants coming in, so we do try to do that. We try to do the thing that Radonna's doing right in her beginning of her budget, say, okay, we think these opportunities are out there, we put it in here. Now, what she's saying is one of the things we're going to do with the new system is going to allow us to separate grants from the general fund operation. So we'll be able to clearly see and track separately the grant activity as it comes, or whether it's realized or not realized.
Well,
but as far as our cap, that we have to approve the legal cap, we try to build in.
But if we have not built in, then we could be in a situation where we get a grant and we can't spend it, or we do have to. I mean, how does that work?
In theory, Mayor, in theory, we have an expenditure limitation from the state. And so when we adopt our budget, we're adopting that cap, that maximum that we can spend. We do that across the city, though. So we're not limited to just the fire department.
It's an overall cap.
Oh, yeah.
It's an overall.
Gotcha. All right.
So as long as we have, and we plan for any anticipated grants across the city, so if one department gets an unexpected grant, but another department did not get a grant they did expect, then we're allowed to use that.
So the answer is yes, I've raised a real problem, but the fact is that's why our total cap is basically a lot higher than what our final budget, and that is to provide room in case these things come up.
And this is a great example of that.
Gotcha.
And you'll see that, and you'll see that each year, and that's why our
I thought that was the case. I know we've had this discussion before, and I thought that was, I just had to be reminded. Okay, thank you.
And one of the areas you see that a lot in is the Falcon Field area, because all of their CIP is grant-related. So you always see their CIP very high when we adopt it. We're anticipating those federal grants. If they don't come in, we just don't do the projects.
Gotcha. Okay. Thank you. I mean, I hope this is a problem that we have, that we get more grants than we anticipated. It would be nice to have that problem, but.
Right.
So well, as long as we're in a, Candace, you can go. You are dismissed. No, so that $4 million increase in personal services, that's primarily related to the staffing of 220. Are there other things in there that comes, because that's almost a 10% increase? Is there any other personnel additions other than the staffing of that? Or is that just in the adjustments we've made? How does that work? Oh, I'm sorry. I dismissed you too early.
Okay.
Mr. Brady has called you back.
There's many things that go into the personal services. The major portion of that is going to be those new positions that are going in. That is a major portion of that. We also have various changes. We have the pension increases that happen.
That's in there
too. That happen every year. That's in the personal services. So it's really a compilation of that. It's medical, it's pension, it's everything that goes in there. But the bulk of that is going to be those positions.
That explains it. Thank you.
Unless you have other questions about our budget, then I will go ahead and open it up for other questions for the chiefs.
Are there any other questions? Nope. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And as with the other presentation, there are slides beyond the questions.
Now we know that.
Performance measures.
Good. Thank you very much. All right, item 2C is actually on there in case we need to come back because we are going to discuss some of these projects in executive session. I don't know if we would need to, but to make sure we cover open meeting laws, we put it on the agenda. We don't plan to come on back and discuss it. So let's go ahead and hear about conferences attended, if we can. Did you have some, Councilman Richards? Okay. Mr. Brady? Go ahead and do scheduling now.
Yes, just remind Council, Wingstock this Saturday, the Mesa Amphitheater from 11 to 5, and invite everybody out there for a great time. So a lot of wings of good music. And then we will have a Public Safety Committee meeting on Monday at 3:30, April 9th at 3:30, and the next study session will be Thursday, April 12th. We'll see you then.
Okay. I guess one thing we should have recognized was the groundbreaking on the new State Route 24. Oh. Vice Mayor, you want to report on that?
Yeah, that was a big event. We broke ground on State Route 24 out between the Loop 202 and Ellsworth Road, and that's going to help connect the Phoenix Mesa Gateway area to our interstate highway system. In addition, since it's going to be on the east side, I think that eventually will help lead to the better access to the airport terminal when it moves to the east side of the airport. So it's exciting to see that start construction.
And I would like to point one thing out on that and another issue. And there was a headline in the paper. And sorry, Gary, I know you don't write headlines. And it talked about a windfall. I think it was talking about the $70 million we've saved. And windfalls are when you win the lottery. The $70 million we've saved on refinancing and the $100-plus million we've saved on the State Route 24 are not windfalls. Those were earned savings. Those were savings that our staff worked hard to realize. And I want to just make that clear that these things don't just happen, don't just appear out of nowhere. These are, and I want to make sure that the staff gets appropriate credit for really working hard. These are not small numbers. You know, between these two, you're talking almost $200 million of real dollar savings to the taxpayers in Mesa and in the region, and those were earned, and our staff were the ones that did a yeoman's job in earning those, and I think that needs to be pointed out. So thank you so very much to everyone.
The article
who worked
actually
on that.
Got it right.
The article guy was wonderful. Gary, you did a great job. Thank you. The article was awesome. It was. I don't want to give the false impression that just appeared out of nowhere because it did not. So thank you to our staff for really creating great things. Appreciate that. Ms. Clark, do you have any requests to speak?
Vice Mayor.
All right. I have a motion from the Vice Mayor, a second from Councilmember Glover to enter into executive session. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
We are entering an executive session. Thank you very much.